called The Black Man Is God.
Yeah, the God.
It's called The Black Man Is God.
Gotta next make sure album. The
this is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got
you
this
me?
Idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all this fighting history. Be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
You really do?
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
The goal ain't having that. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends. Rest in peace, Pop's a legend. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Yours, never make me yours. Think wrong. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never yours, talk about yours. Who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Yo, yo. Jay Hicks is back with another edition of the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Did you hear that glorious intro music? Did you hear it, y'all? I know you heard it. It was fire from my man Scheme out of Cleveland, Ohio, produced by my man 97. That was the official, all the way official, like a referee with a whistle, official Hip Hop Sports Report podcast intro music. Thank you very much for blessing us with that, Scheme. 97, man. We have been talking about doing something like that for a little bit, and the podcast music came down just the other day, and that was the finished product, man. And it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful arrangement. It's a beautiful song with very poignant quotes from the great Muhammad Ali. It starts off with a little bit of ODB at the very beginning, but then we get into a little bit of Ali, which was so fitting this week. And before we get into all that, again, this is the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, the preseason podcast of the year. I'm your man Jay Hicks on the mic, flying solo on Sunday, June the 12th of 2016. How y'all doing? That's good. So we went ahead and wanted to get our own intro music for the podcast, and that had been a long time coming, and long overdue, actually. And like I said, my man Scheme came through and delivered a banger for us that I thought was so fitting for the show, especially given the context of what had happened within the last week. So it was obviously two Fridays ago that the world lost Muhammad Ali, one of the great leaders and athletes that this generation of people have ever known. When I say generation, I'm talking about anybody that walked the earth at the same time that man walked the earth. I've heard people say that he was the greatest. Obviously, the greatest boxer is kind of a general statement that people apply to him, which could be actually debated in some boxing communities. But when people say he's the greatest, they're not talking about just what he did inside the ring. They're talking about the total package that was Ali. And that cannot be understated, I don't think. Or excuse me, that cannot be overstated, I should say. Ali's impact on life and culture in this country and race relations and religious respect for different people's religions and things like that, obviously was tremendous. And, you know, we only had one Muhammad Ali, and it's unfortunate that he's gone. But at the same time, as I've seen Layla put it on television, you know, he's not suffering anymore. And it was difficult to kind of watch him in the current state that he has been in for the last 30 years. I was actually never fortunate enough to see him fight. He actually is before my time. Ali retired before I was born. And I still have the utmost love and respect for him because I learned all about him when I was a kid. And just reading up on him and understanding the sacrifices that he made and the pressure that he was under when he made the decisions that he made and everything that he stood for. And I don't mean just from a political standpoint, but also just from, as I wrote about on hiphopsportsreport.com, you can go read the article that I had written about Ali, just kind of speaking about him making it okay for African Americans to feel good about themselves, you know? And some people take it overboard. We're not going to lie and act like that doesn't exist. You know, there's a lot of athletes and just people in general that are a little bit too much look at me, and it gets to be off-putting. But Ali was the original. He was the original trash talker, the original showman, you know, and the showmanship and the flair in which he fought with and the way he hyped his fights and everything like that was something that the sports world hadn't seen before. And specifically as it relates to African-American people, like I said, he came along at a time where there was a lot of racial and political strife in this land and in this country and in other parts of the world, obviously. And he made it cool for African-Americans to say, you know what, I am smart, I am talented, I am clever, I am good-looking in a world where oftentimes African-Americans are forced to try to live up to a standard of beauty that is laid out by white America and by white culture. And you know, that's something that African Americans, we kind of have to deal with in certain aspects. Now, I mean, it affects different people differently, but I mean, it's a real thing. And especially with women, you hear women talk about it all the time. There's a certain standard of beauty that they feel like they have to live up to. And you know, Ali made it cool to say, you know what, I'm damn good looking right now. I'm pretty. I'm so pretty. You can't touch me. And I ain't got a mark on my face. And I just knocked out Sonny Liston. And I'm 22 years old. I must be the greatest, you know. So we're going to, like I said, I'm going to miss Muhammad Ali for that and for what he stood for from a political standpoint, obviously. And I encourage all of you to go out and check out the column that I had written on hiphopsportsreport.com. I didn't really know where to go with it, because again, it's like I wasn't old enough to see him fight and see him in his day, but yet I still have the utmost love and respect for him. And just from my perspective and what he meant to the culture and what I felt like he meant to hip hop, because obviously this is a hip hop podcast and website also. And again, the braggadocious nature in which he carried himself, I feel like spilled right over into hip hop. I don't think it's any coincidence that he was that way and that he liked to rhyme. Right. And he liked to write poems and things of that nature. And then out of hip hop, we get this culture where it's just accepted for MCs to talk about their own skill and tell everybody about how great they are all the time. And again, that can be a little bit difficult to hear a lot of times, too. But that's part of the game, though. You it's a poor dog that doesn't wag his own tail. You know what I mean? So I feel like Ali had a hand in all that and so much more than I could even begin to explain. And so we want to say rest in peace to the great Muhammad Ali. But it just so happened that the same night in which the news broke that he had passed away was the same night that Scheme hit me with the music for the podcast for the first time. And it just so happened to have all those Muhammad Ali quotes in it. We hadn't discussed that. We had not planned that, obviously. I didn't know that Ali was going to be in it, and I definitely didn't know, obviously, that Ali was going to pass that day, but the fact that his words blessed the beat that was laid out there was just so fitting, man, especially considering what was said. It was the interview where they had right before he fought Sonny Liston for the first time, and they say, this is Cassius Marcellus Clay, he's young, he's handsome, and Ali jumps in, they know it, right? And then he says, he's a poet, he's a prophet, and I felt like he's talking about me, y'all. I felt like Ali's talking about me. I mean, obviously he's talking about himself, but this is another gift from the man himself to us. And I feel like this is our way of staying connected to Muhammad Ali from here on out, because he's talking about being a poet and a prophet, and, you know, I write and I make predictions, and a lot of them are right. And I kind of feel that way about myself when I'm behind this microphone, you know what I'm saying? Why shouldn't I feel that way? And then at the end of it, you know, he's talking to the reporters like, never make me no underdog and never talk about how another heavyweight could whip me and all this other stuff. And that's how I feel about this podcast, because I'm an underdog. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. That's the underdog capital of the world. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I feel like I'm an underdog. I feel like this podcast is for the underdogs, but it's for the guy with the small voice, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to reach that person, and I speak for that person, but speak with intelligence and speak with conviction. And so that's what we try to do here on the podcast. So I thought that was perfect, man. And of course, Scheme crushed it with the lyricism that he put on that, if you listen to the songs, he's talking about just the transitioning from being a young person to you know, to an OG and seeing the young man come up from behind you and take your spot or whatever, but you know, you still gotta go out and get yours, you know what I mean? So that's kind of what that's about. And he even gave a shout out to Pops, who's a legend, who he met his boy at Legends, which is, you know, the barbershop that we both went to, and Pops cut both of our hair. And his real name is Anthony Houston, and I've dedicated a podcast to him a few months back because, unfortunately, we lost him back last October. And so now we get Ali. Ali will live on forever. Pops will live on forever through that intro music, man. So thank you, Scheme, so much again for providing us with something that was perfect. It's a perfect representation of what this podcast is all about. And speaking of, you know, in the spirit of Ali, I got a bone to pick with some of these other podcasters out here, y'all. Now, maybe this is just me. You know, we've been doing the podcast, the Hip Hop Sports Report Preseason Podcast of the Year. We've been doing this since November of 2013. So we're almost 3 full years we've been doing this podcast now. And thank you guys for sticking with us. And if you like the podcast and you, maybe this is your first time hearing it, you can go ahead and subscribe to it on iTunes, or you can subscribe to it on Stitcher Radio, or you can find the podcast on hiphopsportsreport.com. And of course, we post all of our podcast episodes on facebook.com/HHS Report and twitter.com/HHS Report as well. So we're all over the map, y'all. Y'all can find us. But where was I going with this? So these other podcasts, though, this is what I've noticed. I've noticed that the podcast game is getting a little oversaturated and it's a little annoying. And I noticed that it seems like a lot of people are trying to get into this podcast game. They really ain't got no business being in this podcast lane. I'm seeing rappers launch their own podcasts, like a lot of them. I'm seeing rappers launch their own podcasts. Noriega launched a podcast. Okay, that's cool. I've seen Joe Budden launch a podcast. You know, Joe Budden's podcast. The funny thing is, when Joe Budden launched his podcast, he was in the news for clowning Drake, you know? And he's when views dropped and he said, 40 the producer, he's growing, Drake's not growing. It sounds so much like he's just trying to bait Drake into a beef, and people just saw right through it. And a lot of people are like, listen, like, Budden, nobody cares what you think about this, you know. So I'm sure he has quite a few podcast listeners, but Joe Budden, you're a rapper, man. Stick to rapping. Leave the podcasting to the podcasters, you know. While you just do your rap thing, you know. I can never begin to rap as good as you. You know what I mean? And if he's listening to this, I'm sure Joe Budden thinks he can make a better podcast than I can make. And I'm sure that's how he feels, and that's fine. But what I do know is that's one less MC that we need, that we're hearing from. And a lot of people don't feel like Joe Budden's career catalog is even up to snuff anyway. You know? Like why are you now jumping into the podcast lane? That's almost you waving the white flag on your career. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to launch a podcast, and then you're still going to be making music, and then you're going to interview yourself? Like, nobody wants to hear that. That's weird. Like, stay in your lane. Same thing with athletes. I'm seeing all these athletes coming out with podcasts. Everybody's got a podcast, and different websites are giving a bunch of athletes podcasts, and now there's new websites coming out where they have 10 different podcasts on the website. And it's like, man, like, it's getting competitive, y'all. That's all I'm saying. And I'm calling out all these other podcasts right now, okay? Right now. Because I put the preseason podcast of the year up against anybody's. I feel like Denzel in Training Day right now. You know what I'm saying? Remember what Denzel said in Training Day? Hold on, y'all. Hold on.
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches.
I'm putting cases on all y'all. That's how I feel. I'm feeling like Alonzo in Training Day. I'm putting cases on all y'all right now, because I'm serious about this podcast life. You know, we've been doing this for almost 3 years, and all these Johnny Come Latelys on the block want to just pop up and start their own podcast, man. I'm not having that, okay? The preseason podcast of the year has been on this corner for some time, and we ain't going nowhere, you know what I mean? We may take a little bit of time for us to get a podcast off the ground here and there. You know, I just had a baby and all this other stuff. You know, things happen. Okay, good. But the podcast is not going anywhere, y'all. And I'm serious about this podcast and stuff. I'm not just out here doing this for my health. I'm doing it because I like to do it, but I like to speak to y'all, and I like to hear from y'all also. If you guys have opinions about the podcast, please hit me on Twitter, on Facebook, or wherever you can get a hold of us, on the website, Hip Hop Sports Report. And I'm gonna respond to it. But You know, that's kind of how I'm feeling these days. I'm feeling like there's a lot of guys just coming out of the woodwork with their own podcast, and they really don't have no business being on a podcast. Like, if you're an athlete, like, how about you get in the gym and start training? Like, how about you, you know, use your off-season time to either spend time with your family or, like I said, train and get right for the upcoming season? Like, why are you launching a podcast and your playing career is not over yet? And if you are launching a podcast, and that's another, that's you signaling the white flag that obviously you're washed up. You know what I'm saying? Your playing career is washed. Your rap career is washed. And, you know, I never had a rap career and a playing career. I was always washed, okay? So that's why I'm in this podcasting game. So y'all stick to y'all thing and I'll stick to mine. And that'll just be that. But all these athletes coming out of left field with their own podcast, and it's just like, you know, that's nice. You maybe can provide a couple stories here and there that may be interesting or whatever, but you're probably too close to the game to see the forest through the trees anyway. You know, I may not have played on a professional level or anything like that, but I probably watched more games. I probably watched more games than anybody. I've watched more football games than anybody in the NFL because they were busy playing. I've watched more basketball games than anybody in the NBA because they were busy playing. So I have a perspective on the game that they don't even have. So holla at your boy Jay Hicks for the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. And I just wanted to I'll let you guys know that I appreciate anybody that has continuously supported the podcast. And all jokes aside, man, I really do take it seriously. And thank you for being there for us. And tell somebody to tell somebody to know somebody to tell somebody about the podcast and the website. And shout out to my man Anthony Houston and my man Kenneth Hicks for all the hard work they do on the site as well. We got a lot more of exciting things coming up, so stay tuned for that. But again, just getting the intro out the way, thanks once again to Scheme. Rest in peace, Muhammad Ali. And I hope you guys enjoy the music, because we had to retire some of the old intro music that we had been using, and we got our own official Hip Hop Sports Report podcast intro music. So hope y'all enjoy that, and we'll continue to enjoy that. I'm just going through my agenda here. I've talked about the music. I talked about Ali. I've called out other podcasts. The NBA Finals. Okay. The NBA Finals is still going on. It's not over yet, contrary to popular belief. So, Game 5 of the Finals is tomorrow night between the Warriors and the Cavaliers. It's going to be out in Oakland. So, again, the series isn't over, but it ain't looking good for the Cavaliers. And you guys know that I'm a Cleveland native. I support the Cavs, but I still view them objectively. But I still do also support the Cavs. But things aren't looking good for the Wine and Golders right now, because the Warriors got them in a hole that no team has ever come out of in the finals, a 3-1 deficit. I'm going to talk about the Warriors in a second. I'm going to start off talking about the Cavaliers. It was funny, speaking of me calling out other podcasts and all this other stuff, I know I got into a little bit of a Twitter spat the other day, if you want to call it that, with this, I don't want to call the guy a clown, but I don't know how else to say it without calling him a clown. He was bringing some clown arguments to the table anyway, let's put it that way. After Game 4 had concluded and the Warriors had defeated Cleveland at the Q, this person on Twitter who we follow each other, and I thought he was kind of a cool cat, but I'm going to tell you what he ended up doing, and I'm going to show y'all how I made him look stupid. I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to give him that shine, but it's out there. But anyway, he basically came at me and he posted a tweet that said that there was a lot of, he posted some negative statistics about the Cavaliers, and then he concluded with something about Kyrie Irving. There was some kind of shot he took at Kyrie, saying that Kyrie was ball dominant in the fourth quarter and the ball stopped moving, and he put that on Kyrie. And I responded, I retweeted him and quoted it and said, you know, those are some good stats about the Cavs, or actually bad stats about the Cavs, but except for the Kyrie one, I think Kyrie had a good game. I wouldn't hold this against him. And then he retweeted me and said, well, wait a minute, are you saying that somebody stopping the ball and completely clogging up the offense is a good thing or something like that? And I responded like, no, that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that Kyrie shot 50% from the field and scored 34 points, whereas the Cavs' other main primary ball handler and facilitator shot under 50%, scored less points, and had 6 turnovers to Kyrie's 1. And of course, that other person I'm talking about is LeBron James. LeBron finished with 7 turnovers in the game. And of course, I condensed all that down to 140 characters because Twitter is like that. But that's kind of what I made it be known. Like, look, man, I mean, Kyrie was all right tonight. Like, I'm not saying he was flawless, but let's not act like let's not play that game where we just say Kyrie's to blame and we're not even taking the full context of the game into account. LeBron wasn't that aggressive. LeBron was driving to the basket, looking to pass far too frequently, and all that. So the guy responds to me and says, Kyrie shot well in garbage time, but I would say he was average before that. So my response was, well, no, actually, Kyrie had 27 points through three quarters. And he shot 11 of 18 from the floor through three quarters, which is well over 50%. Well, it's over 50%, probably around 60%, right? And Kyrie, and it was a two-point game going into the fourth, so that definitely wasn't garbage time. So the guy responds and says, I hate lazy analysis. And I'm like, wait a minute. Whoa. Lazy analysis? How was that lazy analysis when I came and I brought you facts? You made a statement with no facts supporting it. You just blindly throw something out there talking about Kyrie. I come with facts and then you call me lazy? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And he basically said that it was lazy for me to blame LeBron. I'm like, you can say that about any bad game LeBron has, whether he deserves the blame or not. You can just throw it out there, oh, we're just blaming LeBron as lazy. No, it's appropriate when LeBron deserves blame. That's when you blame him, when he deserves to get blamed. I think that's pretty accurate, right? And you blame Kyrie when Kyrie deserves to get blamed. And Kyrie didn't have a great fourth quarter. I think he shot like 3 for 10 in the fourth quarter. I went back and looked at the fourth quarter after the fact. He took two questionable three-pointers, Kyrie did. He had a couple of wild layup attempts. One was on a fast break though, and it was him versus Klay, and Klay just got a stop. And one was he was clearly trying to draw a foul when the offense couldn't get anything going, and he was unsuccessful. So those are aggressive turnovers. I don't have a huge problem those were aggressive missed shots. I didn't have a great problem with that. And they were well defended. One was by Green in the half court. The other was by Klay off that steal. And then he took a couple questionable three-pointers, but that was it. I mean, like, again, there was far more possessions left in the fourth quarter for LeBron to insert his will on the game, and he just never did. And he went to the rim a couple times. He got blocked by Draymond. LeBron missed a three badly in the fourth quarter. Like, he made it sound like LeBron did his job and Kyrie didn't, when LeBron was outscored by Kyrie and had seven times as many turnovers. And so, you know, I'm just holding LeBron accountable. That's all I was doing. But the guys called it lazy analysis. And so that kind of made me a little upset. And so I told him, you know, I'm like, well, and you saying Kyrie over, he basically said Kyrie over dribbling and the team relying, the team not moving the ball enough and relying too much on Kyrie doomed him in the fourth. And I'm like, well, who's most responsible for rectifying that sort of thing? It's probably LeBron James, right? So, and he still called that patently lazy analysis. And I'm just like, and you saying Kyrie dribbles too much is original? Like, nothing he said made any sense whatsoever. And I went back and even looked at the exchange that we had, and it looks like he deleted the tweet where he said that Kyrie's shooting was average before garbage time, because he was wrong. And so he had to delete that, but he still must have called people lazy. And the fact that he had to resort to calling my analysis lazy after we went back and forth three times just proved that I was right. Like, clearly I won the debate because he had to resort to name calling, right? There's a lot of dummies on Twitter, y'all, and there's a lot of dummies with dumb podcasts out there. And what's interesting is that this clown has way more Twitter followers than I do, so I guess I got to give him a tip of the cap for that. But it's unfortunate that somebody who doesn't know anything about basketball is gained such a wide following, which is why I come to you guys when I do, and I speak with the conviction that I do. So, again, Kyrie, I thought, played well in Game 4, but LeBron didn't, and this is kind of where I wanted to take this thing. And again, the series is not over. It's not. And it's 3-1, and it doesn't look good. And I'll fully admit that. And if anybody wants to sit here and tell me, oh, Justin, man, that series is over, dog. What are you talking about, dog? This series is over. Like, I'm not going to argue with you for saying that. I won't. Because it just doesn't look good. 3-1 doesn't look good for anybody. And it's never been, that lead has never been overturned in the NBA Finals. So, again, you'll get no argument from me on that. I don't believe the series is over just yet, and I'll explain why in a minute. But to this point, Cleveland has dug itself in quite a hole, and I wanted to highlight something specifically as it related to LeBron James, where I feel like he's actually let his team down. And let me get serious here for a second, y'all. Let me get serious. Okay, LeBron James has let the Cleveland Cavaliers and the city of Cleveland down. And there's two areas in which he's really done that. And I'm going to get into them right now. Okay. So the first thing that LeBron has done that's really kind of been a disservice to this team and his quest for bringing Cleveland a championship is his jump shooting has been subpar all season. And it's been a recurring theme. And it's reared its ugly head once again here in the finals. So although it appeared as though LeBron had kind of worked out whatever issues he had with his jumper in, I guess, the first three rounds of the playoffs, he kind of turned the corner late March with his jumper, and then the first three rounds of the playoffs, he shot the ball pretty well from distance. Not even from distance, that kind of means colloquially in basketball terms, that kind of means the three-point line. I'm just talking about outside the paint. His jumpers has looked pretty good the last few weeks and in the first three rounds of the playoffs. But against Golden State, he's been a completely different player. Golden State's been backing off of him, and he's been completely hesitant to take shots and then, of course, make those shots. And I have some statistics to back that up with my lazy analysis, okay? So LeBron, outside the paint in game one, these are all shots outside the paint. So, it can be 10 feet out, but if it's outside the paint, it's outside the paint. You know, if it's outside, like, where the block is, you know, that's only 10 or so feet away or less, you know. I'm just talking strictly anything outside the paint that includes three-pointers, right? In game one, LeBron shot 2 for 6. In game two, he was 1 for 7. In game three, which we won, we as in the Cavs, speaking as a fan there, 5 for 10. And in game four, LeBron was 2 for 8. So for the series, he's 10 for 31 on jump shots outside the paint. That's 32.3%. And if you want to talk about threes specifically, game one, he was 2 of 4. Game two, he was 1 of 5. Game three, he was 1 of 2. And then on Friday night in game four, he was 1 of 5. For the series, that's 5 out of 16, 31.3%. LeBron is shooting in the low 30s on any kind of jumper that's outside the paint. And when Golden State is running a defense in which they're just going to give him that shot, they're going to allow him to shoot the ball from the perimeter, it's going to be a catastrophe for Cleveland, basically. Because when LeBron then goes to drive, he has no confidence in the jumper. So when he goes to drive the ball, the defense converges and collapses on him. And then he becomes indecisive on what he wants to do because he knows he needs to get his teammates involved. So he likes to drive and kick. But if he doesn't have any confidence in his jumper, that means he has to get all of his points off of drives. So he gets into the lane and he knows that he needs to score, but he also knows that he needs to get his guys involved. And so it kind of creates a situation where he's unsure of himself going to the basket and he's playing skittish. It's skittish basketball when he's going into the lane. That's why he's turning it over like crazy. I think he has 23 turnovers in the first four games of the series. He's missing layups. He's been indecisive. He's getting all the way into the lane and kicking it out 20 feet because he doesn't know when to take his shots and when not to. And I think there'd be a lot more clarity for that within his own head if he was getting some buckets from the perimeter. Plus, it would loosen up the defense. It creates more passing lanes. It creates more driving lanes for himself if he's keeping the defense honest with his jumper, but he's not doing it. And the fact that he doesn't have any confidence in that shot, or so it appears, and that he's just not making that shot with any kind of regularity is troublesome because LeBron is wrapping up his 13th year in the league now, y'all. 13 years. Right? Any other star player that plays on the wing or in the backcourt, when as they get older, two things happen. Their back to the basket game gets better and their jump shot gets better because you lose that athleticism. And LeBron, as much as I'd hate to admit it, is losing that athleticism. When's the last time you seen LeBron do a chase down block? Like, you ain't seen one of them since the first Obama administration, right? It's just, you just don't see the same flashes of athletic brilliance from him. You think he's saving it up in the tank, right? But then it's like, where is it during the course of these games? I mean, I've rattled off the zero dark 23, 30 numbers on the podcast before. And we saw what he did in the finals last year. He was dominant. He didn't shoot well from the field, but he wasn't afraid to shoot. And he put up insane numbers. But we haven't seen that same urgency from LeBron throughout the course of this series. And so when you see that and when you see him driving the lane, looking exclusively to pass the ball out to the 3-point line, even though he gets within 10 feet of the cup, it just it blows me away that we're still at this point with him, especially when it appeared as though LeBron had conquered this demon against the Spurs in 2013. I posted the YouTube video from that game, the Game 7 against San Antonio, on my prediction column for this series out on Hip Hop Sports Report. And if you watch that highlight, LeBron, I think, scored 37 or 38 against the Spurs in Game 7. A great clutch performance that somehow escapes the LeBron clutch narrative conversation. Nobody talks about the fact that he put up 37 against Popovich in Game 7. And he hit 5 threes in that game. He had 5 out of 10 from 3. Where is that LeBron? Where is the LeBron? He made jump shots all night in that game. And if you look at the three games in which the three best games of LeBron's career, put it flatly like that, the three best games of LeBron's entire NBA career was that game against the Spurs, that Game 7, where he had 37 and like 12 boards and 5 or 6 assists, right? The game against Boston, where I think it was, I don't know if it was that same year or maybe it was 2012, but Boston had them down 3-2, going back to Boston for Game 6, and LeBron had that psycho look in his eye, like he was literally about to take an axe to the Boston Celtics entire team. You know, like when he had that murderous look, like if he took the hockey mask off Jason Voorhees, the look in his would look like his face would look like how LeBron's face looked that night. Like that's what LeBron, the intensity that he brought to that game. And LeBron scored 45 points in that game, and he resurrected Miami season. LeBron was hitting jumpers all night that night. And the third game that sticks out of the LeBron history books, I guess you could say, is the game that he scored 48 points against the Pistons in the Palace in 2007. And LeBron was hitting jumpers all over the place. He was dotting Tayshaun Prince and dotting Chauncey Billups and all these guys. All three of LeBron's biggest, most clutch performances in the playoffs in his entire career, he was hitting nothing but jumpers in all of those games. The Cavaliers are going to need another game like that tomorrow night if the Cavs are going to push this thing to 6 games. And LeBron is going to have to continue to shoot jumpers and have the confidence to take and make jumpers going forward in this series if they're going to have a shot at winning this thing. It's just that simple. So that's I just kind of had to get that off my chest, man. And then the other thing with LeBron is, and this is really hard to say, but it's the truth. There just appears to be a block, a mental block or a complex. I don't know what it is. A friend of the podcast, Mark Hicks, always refers to LeBron as a mental midget. I don't know what it is, man, but something about LeBron when his back's against the wall in these tough spots, like you don't see the best from him. You don't see the best LeBron when the Cavaliers are losing. You see the best LeBron when all things are clicking on all cylinders and everybody's hitting shots, and that's when LeBron looks like he's at his best. But when the chips are down and you need something like what Klay Thompson did against Oklahoma City in Game 6, LeBron has authored a performance like that once or twice in his career maybe, but you don't see that too often from LeBron. And I don't know what it is, man. Like it's just he just appears to be kind of like a front runner. And again, don't like saying it, don't like admitting to it, but you know, it doesn't mean that the Cavs can't come back, because he could easily prove me wrong and the team could prove me wrong. But if you're with LeBron, like you don't want to be in a situation where LeBron is asked to dig out of a hole. Like you want to be in front, you want to be dictating and controlling from jump. You know, the Cavs won Game 3 by 30, they won wire to wire that game. But if the Cavs are going to be down 10 points in the fourth quarter tomorrow night in Oakland, I don't know how they come back from that. They probably end up losing by 20. That's just the reality of it. I wanted to talk quickly about Kevin Love too. For all the people that's out there saying that Kevin Love is the reason to blame for the Cavs losing this series, do better, okay? Do better. That's low-hanging fruit, and it's a poor opinion and stance to take. Now, I'm not saying Kevin Love is without criticism or he's without flaw or that he hasn't made mistakes or done stuff wrong in this series. I'm not saying anything like that. What I am saying is that Kevin Love is not the sole reason for the Cavaliers' struggles. Now, I don't think that the Cavs are better without him. I think the Cavs are absolutely a better team with him because people seem to forget, regardless of what you think about his time in Minnesota, he was an all-NBA player, not an all-star. He was a two-time all-NBA player. That basically means he was one of the top 15 players in the league twice. If you're an all-star, somewhere between 24 and 30-plus guys make the all-star team between the two conferences. All-NBA takes five guys for the first team, five guys for the second team, five guys for the third team. I think Love made maybe the second team once and the third team once, if I'm not mistaken. So this guy's a two-time all-NBA player. Averaged 26 and 12 in Minnesota. Again, his team didn't make the playoffs, but I had this conversation with our friend Anthony Houston on the phone yesterday. I would challenge you to name the best teammate Kevin Love ever played with in Minnesota. Who do y'all got? Ricky Rubio, Shabazz Muhammad, Pekovic, Kevin Martin. I mean, who else was he playing with all these years since 08 up until 2014? Like, this is in the West, y'all. This is in the East where people like to say, because people like to compare Chris Bosh and Kevin Love, and even I do it from time to time, because I say, well, Chris Bosh's production went down when he got to Miami also. And granted, Bosh is a better defender than Kevin Love, but Love is a better rebounder than Bosh is. And Love is a better three-point shooter than Bosh is. And Love's a better passer than Bosh is. So there's advantages to each of their games, but the point is that when you get multiple stars on the same team like that, somebody's statistics are going to suffer. That's just what it is. Chris Bosh's numbers suffered, and the Heat won two rings and went to four straight finals. Kevin Love's numbers have suffered, and the Cavs are still in two straight finals and still have a shot at winning it this year, albeit a small one. They still have a shot at winning it this year. So I've seen people on national TV say that the Kevin Love experiment hasn't worked. How is it hasn't worked? How has it not worked? Seriously, the Cavs are going to the finals 2 years in a row. They had, I think they were the number two seed in the East last year, I think. They're the number one seed this year. They're winning close to 60 games a year. Like, what part of this is not working? Is it the part where we get to the finals? Is it the part where we get to the finals and lose? Because getting to the finals and losing doesn't necessarily mean that the experiment didn't work. I don't know that there's enough evidence there to support that claim, especially when you're talking about going up against a Golden State team that might just be historic, right? So I don't know how you can pin all that on Kevin Love. Now, again, Love needs to hit the glass consistently. I don't always see that from him. He gets into trouble when he's forced to put the ball on the floor because he's not athletic enough to hang with Golden State. I get that. I don't think he's a great matchup for Golden State, but that doesn't mean that he's not a great matchup for any other team, like maybe, I don't know, the other 29 teams in the league. If the Cavaliers were faced with a seven-game series against any other team in the league that's not Golden State, I don't have any reason to think that they couldn't win it, to be honest with you. I think they could beat Oklahoma City in a series. I think they could beat San Antonio in a series. I think they could beat the Clippers in a series. I know they could beat any team from the East in a series. So maybe the only team that has their number is Golden State. And maybe Love just isn't a great matchup for Golden State. That doesn't mean the Love experiment failed. That's not what that means. Especially considering how Kevin Love has not been utilized properly for much of the time that he's been in Cleveland. Come on. I'm saying every time the Cavs lose, you see the Andrew Wiggins debate come up, the Andrew Wiggins meme pop up, as if Andrew Wiggins were going to solve all these problems. You think Andrew Wiggins, a 19-year-old, was going to beat Golden State? He's going to be the difference? I mean, he probably is a better player to have in this type of series against this opponent. But that doesn't mean that the Cavs are a better team. That doesn't mean that the Cavs would have gotten to the finals necessarily. LeBron is 31 years old now. He doesn't have time to wait around for Andrew Wiggins to get good. You know, Kevin Love is in his prime years. It made total sense for the Cavs to make that deal. They made the right decision in the moment. Maybe if they could take it back today, they would. I don't know. But I supported the Cavs drafting Andrew Wiggins. My only criticism was I thought they could have waited a little bit to see what they had in him before making the deal for Love, because I thought that the deal for Love wasn't going anywhere and that they could have made it mid-season in LeBron's first year back if they wanted to. But that was my only criticism of the Cavaliers management as far as it related to the Kevin Love trade for Andrew Wiggins. Kevin Love is an all-star player. He's an all-NBA player. You want to have a guy like that on your team. I don't care what anybody says. He's not the reason the Cavs are losing this series, okay? He could be playing better. So could Kyrie. So could LeBron. So could the bench. So could Tyronn Lue. He could be coaching a better series. Because as we talked about here on the podcast before, I can't understand why Tyronn Lue is trying to out-warrior the Warriors. And that's a complaint that, you know, a lot of people that have been on this podcast, Vince Hicks, Mark Hicks, the Hickses, as a collective, we struggle to understand why it is that we're trying to out-warrior the Warriors. It didn't make a ton of sense then. It doesn't make a ton of sense now. So lay off Kevin Love a little bit. I just don't see how it's a failed experiment. Saying that the Andrew Wiggins deal should not have went down is revisionist history. And anybody that's acting like that the Cavs should not have made that deal, you know, maybe they felt at the time that the Cavs shouldn't have made that deal, but I think most people were okay with it at the time, and not everybody wants to act like, you know, they have an Urk pad or some kind of Urkel time machine to go back and just kind of talk as if they knew all along that this was going to plague the Cavs. Like, they knew Golden State. Golden State wasn't even in the finals when Golden State wasn't even Golden State when LeBron and Kevin Love came to Cleveland. You know what I mean? They made the finals the first year LeBron was in Cleveland with Love, and they made it this year. But the year before that, when LeBron's last year in Miami and Love's last year in Minnesota, the Golden State Warriors got knocked out in the first round by the Clippers. Okay, so nobody knew that Golden State was going to be this team at that time. So you can't act like we should not have traded Wiggins for Love. It just doesn't make sense. So anyways, getting off that, I want to talk about the Warriors a little bit because they're up 3-1. And again, this thing's not over with, but doesn't look good, right? For the Cavs, that is. It looks great if you're a Warriors fan or if you are the Warriors team. It is great. You have to give Golden State some credit, y'all. I know a lot of people that don't like Golden State. I know a lot of people that don't want to give Golden State any props whatsoever. You got to give them props, y'all. I mean, you have to. They're on the cusp of winning two straight rings. They have the 73-9 record in their back pocket. They got a two-time MVP. They had Steph being a unanimous MVP, which I had no problem with. I feel like anybody that had a problem with Steph winning unanimous MVP, really their problem is the fact that nobody else before Steph won unanimous MVP. That's what their problem is with. And if that's the case, then you really have a beef with sports writers of yesteryear. You don't have a beef with Stephen Curry, because Stephen Curry deserved MVP this year. So if you ask me as an individual, did Steph Curry deserve MVP this year? I would say yes. And so if you happen to have asked 120 other individuals and they all give you the same answer, so be it. But don't hold the mistakes of sports writers from the 90s who'd never voted Jordan unanimous or never voted Shaq unanimous or whatever. Don't hold them accountable for what's going on right now. Okay, your beef is with them, not with Curry. And the Warriors showed real toughness in game four. They came out and won a game that they kind of had to win. I mean, they didn't want to get into a scenario where it was a best of three situation, especially with Loose Cannon and Draymond Green on the team, right? And so the news came out today that Draymond is suspended for game five. And let me tell you something. Bravo, NBA. He should have been suspended for game five. And that exchange with LeBron, first of all, LeBron absolutely baited him. So do better, Draymond. Like, be smarter than that. I guess, you know, Draymond's a smart player, but he lets the emotions get the best of him far too often, and this is a prime example. He kind of flails his limbs again, which he's prone to do, and he kind of threw a fist kind of in the vicinity of LeBron's, you know, his little princes, you know what I'm saying? The little Prince James is down there. So how many times is Draymond going to get away with hitting guys in the nuts before the league steps in? That's what I'm saying. Like, that exchange between him and LeBron was not that bad. It was not really flagrant worthy, I don't even think, to be honest. So the fact that they didn't call a flagrant foul during the game, I didn't have a problem with that. But when you look at it in the context of, this is like the fourth time he's hit somebody in the junk this postseason alone, plus he's throwing kicks up around people's faces and stuff. Nah, sit your ass down, Draymond. You're not right. You're getting carried away. You need to sit down somewhere, okay? And I don't know how much more Golden State is going to get away with, frankly. Because as talented as they are, J.R. Smith caught an elbow, I think, in game one. Kevin Love caught an elbow in game two. Neither of those were called. Steven Adams is getting kicked in the junk against Oklahoma City. Draymond's been throwing kicks all over the place like Liu Kang. No suspensions, no nothing. Nobody cares. LeBron's going to the rack repeatedly. He's never getting a foul call, as Tyronn Lue said the other day, and that's true. If you think LeBron gets superstar calls, you don't watch enough Cavs game. LeBron never gets calls when he goes to the rim anymore. Never, okay? He never gets superstar calls going to the cup. And then you have Andrew Bogut, who's mastered the moving screen And if you follow me on Twitter, y'all, you know that I've been very vocal about this. And it's a very small part of the game, but the thing about it is that it only takes one open look and one made shot by Curry and or Thompson to ignite not only their individual games, but the collective game of the entire Golden State team. That's why the moving screen thing is so important, because Bogut goes out of his way to set these moving screens, and nobody's looking at him because everybody's mesmerized by Stephen Curry. So when Curry comes off a pick and catches the ball, everybody's like, ooh, what's Steph going to do? He's gonna throw up a 30-footer and it's going to go in. Nobody's looking at how he got open in the first place. And it's because Andrew Bogut is setting these illegal-ass screens that nobody calls. And he does it every game and gets away with it. And it blows my mind. I don't know how the league hasn't cracked down on this yet, but they haven't. And it just takes one shot to ignite a Golden State run. And I've seen it happen, I think, at least four times now in these playoffs alone, where Bogut has set a moving screen for Steph or Klay, usually Steph. He makes a shot, and then all of a sudden, it starts a Golden State run, and it changes the entire complexion of the game. I've seen it happen multiple times, and it happened again the other night. So, I mean, whatever. Golden State appears to be getting away with a lot, which they don't need to. They don't need to be getting away with none of this stuff, because they're really, really good. We don't need to be helping a team that's getting away with... I mean, we don't need to be helping a team that won 73 ball games. We don't need to help a team that is on the brink of winning back-to-back titles. They don't need any more help than they're already getting. So they were catching a lot of breaks. They were catching breaks with injuries. They're catching breaks on their opponents. They've gone two straight years in the playoffs in the West, somehow avoiding the Clippers and the Spurs. I don't know how they managed to pull that off, but they did it. They only played Oklahoma City once, and they played a beat-up Cavs team one time. Like, the amount of stuff that Golden State's gotten away with in these 2 years is astronomical. But it doesn't mean that they're not very talented, and it doesn't mean that they're not the best team in the league and that they don't deserve these two championships. And so they were the best team last year. It looks like they might be the best team again this year. And I have to give them credit for the second half they played offensively and defensively. They shut down Cleveland in the second half of game four. And, you know, Iguodala, anytime he's on the floor, he seems to be presenting problems for Cleveland in some capacity. Guys like Harrison Barnes, who I don't really care for Harrison Barnes, he's okay, but he's been making open shots. When Sean Livingston's been called upon, he's been making shots. Draymond had his game where he went off, and then Steph and Klay finally had their game when they went off. I think for Cleveland, in order for them to have a chance in Game 5, even without Draymond, that doesn't mean that Golden State's going to lose, because we just saw Cleveland play without Kevin Love the other night, and Cleveland won by 30. So the Cavs are going to have to shut down Klay and Steph again. They're going to have to sell out to shut down Klay and Steph, even more so than when they did before. Because when you go out of your way to shut down Klay and Steph, you're putting a lot of pressure on Draymond Green, who's typically the recipient of the pass on pick and rolls. When they double the ball handler, which is usually Steph on a screen and roll attempt, he's passing it to Draymond, and then Draymond is now the playmaker and the decision maker in a 4-on-3. And that works well for Golden State, because Draymond's a very good passer. He can drive, he can finish at the rim, and he can make jump shots. He's out the picture now. So now who becomes that person? It's probably going to be Iguodala. I would expect to see a lot of Andre Iguodala setting screens for Curry and Thompson in this game. So when they trap the ball handler and they hit the roll guy, if that's whoever's in the middle of the floor, I think it's going to be Iguodala, and then they're going to let Iguodala, who's also a very good passer, make that decision. But you have to start with taking Klay and Steph out of the game. You cut the head off the snake, and the body will die. That's what happened in the first two games, except the body didn't die, because at home, role players tend to play really well, but they don't play so well on the road, and we know that. And I told people privately that if the Cavaliers shut down Klay and Steph in Cleveland, that the Cavs are going to win by 30. I literally said that before game 3, and they won by 30. So it can happen again. It can happen in Golden State, especially if that game is close late. Golden State might get tight, because they know that they'll have to jump on a plane and head back to Cleveland if they miss that opportunity to close them out in 5. So series isn't over yet. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. But I just want to say again, give Golden State credit. They've worked their way to a 3-1 series lead. They just brought an intensity level that the Cavs didn't bring the first two games, and they out-hustled them in the second half of game 4 and kind of stole that game almost. I mean, stealing isn't probably the best word to use, but they kind of they kind of went in there and, you know, they kind of pickpocketed that game from the Cavaliers because the Cavs were feeling pretty good, up 5 at the halftime. I think they were up 8 in the third at one point. I think they were, it was a 2-point game going into the fourth, and then Cleveland kind of just fizzled out. And so credit to Golden State for putting themselves in the position they're in. They got to close the deal, though.
Cool and Dre.
Real quick to wrap up the podcast, I want to talk a little hip-hop, y'all. Y'all heard this All the Way Up record? I know that's getting a lot of spins out in New York City. Do they say spins anymore? I don't know. I don't know what they're saying no more, y'all, but it's getting a lot of burn in New York City. I'm all the way up. That record. So that record's getting a lot of noise. Jay-Z's on it with Fat Joe and Remy Ma and French Montana. That's like the remix, I think. I gotta be honest with y'all. I'm not impressed. Nope. Not impressed. I heard it first time I heard it. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, Jay-Z's verse, eh. I saw some people saying that Jay-Z's verse is fire. I'm like, nah, no. I've heard fire Jay-Z verses many times before. That wasn't it. I mean, he kind of comes out the block stumbling over his words about Lemonade and no. I mean, it wasn't what I've come to expect from Jay-Z. And I never was a Fat Joe fan either, so, you know, I just don't love that record. And I think it kind of has an annoying sound a little bit to it. But I feel like in absence of a New York summer anthem, I feel like that song is kind of getting the push, and it probably doesn't deserve it. Because I just don't think it's that great of a record. But New York is thirsty, very, for a record from one of their own, you know. And I guess Panda, you could count Panda in that discussion, I guess, because Panda's from a New York kid or whatever. We wrote about him on the website, Kenneth Hicks did. Go ahead and check out the column that he wrote about Panda and Designer kind of biting Future a little bit and all that stuff. Maybe that's the New York anthem of the year, but maybe us older heads, though, who aren't really into this 19-year-old kid on the Panda record, want to hear one of our heroes from our generation. So then you get, that's how you get Remy and Fat Joe and Jay-Z. Those are three veterans. Fat Joe and Jay, of course, going back well into the 90s. The older crowd in New York, I think, is waiting on a record like that. And we're getting stuck in a situation where we're putting these lofty expectations on songs that don't really deserve it and can't carry it, because I don't think that song is that good. The other weird thing is you had the Jay-Z record with Pusha T, the Drug Dealer Anonymous, right? That's better. That's better for sure. I don't love that song. I like it. Jay-Z's verse was straight. It was good. I don't think it was nothing special. I didn't feel the need to call up my brother after I heard it. I didn't feel the need to do an immediate blog post about it. I mean, it was fine. Like I said, it was adequate. But again, it kind of goes back to the same thing with Jay-Z. Like, he's in a position where we just don't know what we want him to rap about anymore, because either he's rapping about drugs and all that stuff that he did 25 years ago that nobody wants to hear about anymore, or he's rapping about all the stuff he's doing now, which for some reason tends to rub a lot of people the wrong way. And so he's stuck in this box where he just can't rap about anything. Now we're in a position where he has to rap about his marriage, like, which I guess is okay, except it just seems so forced now with the whole Lemonade thing and it being on released on Tidal exclusively. And then there's these reports that says Jay-Z is gonna make a record, response record to Beyonce. Like, you're making like almost like a diss record about your own wife, and now you got dueling diss records in the house. Like, what kind of weird stuff is that? Like, it's just a weird set of circumstances, I feel like. And I don't know if that song is enough to get people off Jay-Z's back. I feel like Jay-Z, who has been the king of New York pretty much since 1998 up until now, I would say, still, like, the whole king of New York debate and the whole king of New York concept and the concept that New York is the epicenter of hip-hop, that whole thing, I feel like, is in lockstep with Jay-Z as Jay-Z's career goes forward, because Jay-Z has held that crown for so long. But that was acceptable back when Jay-Z was the coolest man on the planet. Jay-Z's going to be like 48 years old before this year ends. And he's a family man. And he's not in the hood no more. He's not gangster, nothing like that anymore. And he's not cool to young people anymore. Because the young people got older. He got older. And people don't think he's cool anymore. He's, you know, they crack on his outfits that he wears. He's out in Ireland with Beyonce and all these random places around the world. And he's on boats and stuff. And he's just dressed like a dad. You know what I'm saying? In, much in the same way that people make fun of Obama with his dad jeans when he's on the bicycle trail with the family, much like how they made fun of the Steph Curry, the Chef Curry 2 Lows, those monstrosity of a sneaker that came out the other day, those dad sneakers. You know, maybe I shouldn't be talking because I'm a dad too. Maybe I should lay off the dads a little bit. Father's Day's around the corner. Let me ease up on the dads a little bit. I'm sorry, but I'm just saying, for the purposes of hip hop, youth wins. Like, the youth culture is what drives it, and Jay isn't young anymore. And so for him to have the crown, like, nobody stepped up to take the crown from him. If Kendrick Lamar or Drake were from New York, I think it'd be a different discussion. Maybe even if J. Cole was from New York, it'd be a different discussion. But they're not. So the King of New York crown has kind of been vacant for some time, and there's a lot of great artists that have come out of New York, like A$AP Rocky, just to name one. But I don't think anybody is on the level of taking the crown away from Hove. And I just feel like Hove and the whole King of New York thing, it's kind of dying a slow and painful death right now. And that can all change at the drop of a hat if Jay puts out something that's absolutely fire the next time we hear from him. But, you know, I'm talking about an album, not a feature or a song. I'm talking about a full album that's fire. But, you know, Magna Carta hasn't really aged well. I've seen people take shots at Blueprint 3, even though I love Blueprint 3. I've heard people take shots at that record saying it didn't age well. I like Magna Carta too, for the record. And, you know, there's a review out on it on Hip Hop Sports Report if you want to go check it out from a couple of years ago. But I like that record too. But it's just, Hove just doesn't have the impact that he once had. And it's sad to see. Much like LeBron, how LeBron's athleticism has started to dwindle. and he hasn't kept up on the jump shot like he needs to, because all other great players like Kobe and Jordan and all these guys, and you know, the older you get, the better your jump shot is supposed to get. And LeBron's in year 13 and it hasn't materialized yet. But much like that, Jay-Z's aging, and he's kind of aging out of the King of New York conversation, I feel like. But yet nobody's there to take the crown either. So, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it unfolds. But we need a better anthem from New York for the summer. I'm not sold on all the way up. I'm all the way up. No, that's not doing it for me. Is it doing it for y'all? Let me know if I'm wrong. Y'all holler at me, twitter.com/HHS Report, facebook.com/HHS Report. Let me know if I'm wrong about that record. Let me know if I'm wrong about Jay-Z, you know, aging out of the King of New York conversation, because I kind of feel like he is, and he's just leaving the crown vacant. Maybe I'm wrong about all that stuff. Maybe you feel like Joey Badass is going to take the crown. I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. But, you know, just, I'm anxious to know how you guys feel about this, and I'm anxious to know if you think that record is going to carry the flag for the summer, for the city. Like, I don't feel like it is. I don't feel like it is. But we'll leave it there. Thank you guys for listening. We got new music on the podcast. I'm going to play it on the outro just because it was that dope to me. So again, shout out to Scheme in 97 for the beautiful record. Rest in peace to Muhammad Ali. And if I can be serious for a second, want us to say how hurt and how I just wanted to call out the tragedy in Orlando today. I mean, it's sickening at this point that this kind of stuff is still happening, and that all these yahoos keep giving each other ideas, and people still think it's okay to carry, you know, firearms into public places like that and just open fire, man. It's just horrific. And I don't know. I mean, people are trying to turn it into a religious thing. It seems more like a hate crime than like a religious protest or religious act of religious terrorism or anything like that. I don't think that's the case. I think it was more of a hate crime from what I know so far. But regardless, that's not what this nation is supposed to be about. And I don't know, man. It's getting harder to justify people. It's getting harder for people who are in favor of not reforming the gun laws to justify their position when you keep seeing stuff like this. Like, why do civilians have access to these semi-automatic weapons like this? And that they can just carry them in public, whether they have a license or not. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand how this keeps happening and how nothing seems to change. There doesn't seem to be any, you know, no real changes happen. Like, they just have metal detectors at the club. Like, that's it. So, like, you can have it, but you can't carry it in here. As in other words, if you're in a car outside the club, you can have your semi-automatic weapon there, but you just can't bring it within the club. Well, if I have a gun and I want to go into the club, you're not going to stop me with your metal detector. I'm just going to open fire and walk in. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of a flawed, it's kind of flawed thinking, you know? And so, my prayers go out to all the victims. You know, if you live an LGBT lifestyle, do you, you know what I mean? It's a beautiful thing. Do your thing. It shouldn't impact anybody else one way or the other. And that's just what the reports are, is that this guy just had a problem with gay people. And it's just like, gay people they're not messing with you. They're not harming anybody. I don't see what the issue is there. And, you know, gay people are allowed to get married now. I think that's a fantastic thing. Like, why can't people just be happy and be and let people love one another, whoever they want to love? Like, I don't understand. I don't think it's a religious thing. I don't think it's a political thing. I don't think that we should be trying to legislate that sort of thing. But a whole other conversation that doesn't really quite fall into the parameters of what this podcast is supposed to be about. But I just wanted to make sure that I acknowledge the victims and the families of the victims. And you know, I'm so sorry that this had to happen. And so my prayers go out to you all. But again, thank you guys for listening. And check out the podcast on Twitter, on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. We need more subscribers. We need people to comment and like the show and all that stuff. So please tell a friend, tell them to download the podcast and leave feedback, commentary. If you guys want to talk about the finals, if you want to rap about, I'm all the way up. Just let me know. And, you know, we're going to get at y'all real soon with a mock draft podcast. This is Jay Hicks signing off, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, the preseason podcast of the year. We got our own music, y'all. We made it. We on top now. We out of here. Peace. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up. Who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours. All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like this. Never make me think of one. Just make me angry. Never make me go in the dark. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Or ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me. He's a poet, a prophet.